Every time you train with the motivation and purpose that you will be the hardest person someone ever tries to kill. Tim Kennedy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Assault Forward Podcast. Do you give a shit or not? Season 1, Episode 17. I'm your host, Joe Himpleman, joined by my Assault Forward co-founder, Shah Chowdhury. And on this episode, Lessons Learned from the Military, Business, and Entrepreneurship for Life, we had an opportunity to sit down with the CEO and founder of Ranger Up and Diesel Jack Media, Nick Palmisano. Now, Nick joined us by phone, and unfortunately, the audio quality of our recording was not the best, and we apologize to you for that. However, the content of the conversation we had with Nick is definitely worth sharing, so we wanted to go ahead and put it out in this podcast for you to listen to. If you're a veteran entrepreneur, small business owner, someone considering a transition from active duty into the civilian world, I think Nick has a lot of incredible insights to share from his journey. And he jumps right in when we start the interview, talking a little bit about his background and how he came to start Ranger Up.
Yeah, it was a really tough transition. When I joined the military, it was my intention to see it through to retirement. You know, I was a really motivated cadet, getting out wasn't really on the horizon. And then a couple things happened. I had a series of not great battalion commanders, or at least battalion commanders that I didn't appreciate at the time. I was looking at major, and I was thinking, man, I'm having a hard time thinking of a job as a major that I actually want to do. And, you know, the next time you're really going to be in front of troops is as a battalion commander, if you're lucky enough to get one. I was kicking around SF. I was kicking around a few things. And then, you know, my ex-wife, wisely, you know, told me, you know, hey, I support you no matter what. But if you want to have kids, knowing you, knowing how involved you'd want to be, I'm not up for having kids while you're still in. And so, you know, kind of thought about that. And, I kind of simultaneously, started looking at, you know, what I might want to do inside the military, and also, you know, just to keep options open, applied for some business schools. And ended up getting into Duke University, and just, you know, it was a tough call. Like, some people are super sure. Some people are, basically like have no choice. Like, I was like, man, like, you know, my life could go one of two directions, and ultimately ended up deciding, hey, I'm going to go to business school because, you know, my ex is right. Like, I don't want to have kids and do what so many of my friends have had to do, which is, you know, deploy time and time again and miss huge blocks of their lives. It's just like, I don't know how they do it. It's like, I have a tremendous amount of respect for people that keep making that decision, because I know how hard it is for them. So I got out and I went to Duke University, which, you know, has to be like the easiest transition on paper that you can imagine. It's not like no one's feeling sorry for the guy that's going to, you know, going to Duke, but it was actually really hard. It was hard for a few reasons. One, culturally, Duke is a great place, and I actually recommend it now more than even when I was there for veterans getting out, because it's very veteran friendly. But you know, no matter what any of these kind of elite schools say, you know, most of the kids there are really wealthy, like, you know, generational wealth. And you come at life a different way than you do, you know, like leaving the egalitarian meritocracy that is the military and going to a place where, you know, some of the people you're in class with, their parents literally own jets, you know. I went to and this isn't in, like a, an attack on people with that kind of wealth in any way, shape or form. Like, but you know, I had a buddy that was like, hey, let's all go to my parents' beach house this weekend, you know, and, you know, he invited like 15 people and I'm thinking like, all right, cool. It's going to be military style. Like I literally grabbed like an old military, like whoopee, you know, I had like, all right, I'm going to be in a corner somewhere on the floor. And, when I got there, there were like two carved swans in the front. The house had the name. I'm not going to say the name, but like, I mean, it was like, there was like a glass tower for reading at the top. There were 25 beds. Jeez, I mean, it was like, it was like the biggest house I had ever been in. And it was like their beach house. So, you know, kind of that juxtaposed with, you know, as I was starting school, you know, one of my favorite, you know, I know you're not supposed to have favorites, but one of my favorite soldiers killed, my buddy had taken over, you know, the unit and he was injured and I'm sitting here, you know, having drinks, at a fancy school, you know, essentially doing the easiest thing I had ever done in my life. Like business school is the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. And like, it really messed with me. Like it put me like in a weird mental state. And this was like peak, everyone on the Iraq war, you know, and I'm not saying that that was right or wrong, but just, you know, to hear a bunch of kids that had no idea what people were doing, just shitting on the war all the time, lost a friend and like felt super guilty about, I just felt guilty about being there. And that was hard. That was the hardest part about that. And so then went from business school. I got a great gig at a Fortune 100 company, and that was John Deere. And people don't think about John Deere as being like a huge, you know, firm, but while I worked at John Deere and during the period of time that I was at business school, John Deere actually grew faster than Apple, just to kind of put it in perspective. And that was a great company. Like I really enjoyed, you know, the people there. Like I thought it was like a quality group of people, but kind of two things happened. The first thing is I couldn't get super excited about it because I was used to, you know, like we think about the military as like not having a lot of control, you know, especially as a junior leader, which is what I was, you know, like, oh, you know, first it's the CO, then it's the battalion commander. Like there's always somebody kind of curtailing what you want to do. Yeah. But you actually realize when you get out that you had a lot of freedom. You know, people trusted you with a lot of responsibility. And then you get into a corporate setting and, you know, there is the incentive is not to go for it. The incentive is not to fuck up. And let me know if I'm not allowed to.
No, you're completely fine. We curse all the time.
So the incentive is don't screw up. I watched dudes that had been hugely successful and then, you know, they had one mess up and like everybody kind of frames them for all time as, oh, that's the guy that screwed up that one thing.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's consistent with what not every firm is like that, but that is consistent with what I've seen. You know, with just about every firm that you know, when I'm talking to friends, when I've been involved, it's, you know, the bigger the firm, it's more about not rocking the boat.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
So, you know, so I started this hobby and Ranger Up when it started was a hobby. I wish I could tell you like I had this plan. You know, I don't have a cool entrepreneurship story like that. For me, it was, Even though I had graduated from Duke, I was still volunteering at Duke teaching the ROTC combatives and small unit tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids that I did combatives with were like, hey, you know, I really want some military t-shirts, but everything is so hardcore. You know, it's everything at the time was a 7.62 design, which was like skulls, snakes, death from above, over the, you know, really cool, but over the top art like you'd expect to see on a biker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because of that, you know, these kids, and they hadn't been in these units, but also like they wanted to be cool and have something they could wear around campus that spoke to their service without being, you know, so overt. They were like, you know, where do you get shirts? And I thought about it. And the only t-shirts that I had that I really valued were, you know, one from when I graduated Ranger School from Miller Lite, which is still the coolest t-shirt I've ever received. it was so cool, man. Like I tell this story all the time. Like, I don't really drink domestic beer anymore, but if I have to drink domestic beer, I still drink Miller to this day, because Ranger School, a bunch of dudes are, you know, like the colonels are up there. Maybe there was a general. I don't remember. They're all giving the same speech about leadership. And then at some point, this dude, like, he was bald. He was a little chunky. He gets up there and he's like, you know, hey guys, my name's Bob. I work for Miller. I don't really have a speech. I'm kind of like, you know, wowed by you guys, but we made these shirts for you. And on the front, it's got like a real, like low, like barely there Ranger. No, it doesn't have the tab, but it's the insert, you know, that's in the tab. Mm-hmm. And on the back, it says, after 8 weeks and 5 days of living hell, it's finally Miller time.
Nice.
I was like, man, you guys can fucking mark it. Like, yeah. It was money. And then unit t-shirts, you know, that, like, you know, from or from, you know, being involved in some kind of an exercise or whatever. Like that's it. That's all I had. And so I made some t-shirts that I, for my students, not charging them, but, you know, went to Michael's with a buddy and, you know, and we got like transfer paper and we made stupid graphics on paint that were kind of funny. And like, you know, the kids were like, these are really cool. You should think about actually starting a business and hiring a designer. And, you know, and like, I kicked that around. And then I was like, I kind of liked the idea of it because I didn't feel like I was moving forward working at a corporation, you know, it's mm-hmm. just kind of like I'm passing time.
Yeah.
It was the first time I felt like I wasn't moving forward. Like in the military, you know, we complain, but like you're on a trajectory always of you're up or you're out. And then, you know, business school, it was like, okay, I'm learning all these civilian skills. And then I hit this job, and like, at first it was something new and exciting, but then once I got comfortable, that's what it was. It was comfortable. And I just didn't want to be there for 30 years and call that a life.
Yeah.
So I jumped into I jumped full force into the hobby. And at first, you know, the first year, this was before Facebook existed, or at least before Facebook existed in a way where I think before Facebook existed. There wasn't like an easy path to get people to know who you were.
Yeah.
So I was writing articles. I was advertising on blogs because, you know, mill blogs were a big thing back then. And it was like slowly building the brand up. And I think the first year was, you know, well, the first year was only like 3 months, so I'm not even counting that. But the first real year of operation, we did about $100,000.
Wow.
Which, you know, like I thought was cool, but it wasn't like a huge deal, you know. And the second year of operation, we did about $200,000. And then coming up on the third anniversary of Ranger Up, like literally there were, I think, 7 days between the actual anniversary of Ranger Up and me quitting. My boss let me know that I was going to get promoted. Mm-hmm. And I was already making more money than anybody in my family had ever made. Like, John Deere treated me very well. And I had been promoted. And, you know, I was, you know, after bonuses and stuff, like, I was knocking on the door of $250,000 a year. And I was like 30, 29. I can't remember. And I basically got told, you know, I was getting a $100,000 raise. And I, instead of being happy, I actually got like kind of massive anxiety. Like, I need to make a decision right now because I'm already making so much money that it's hard to leave this. And if I stay on this path any longer, I'm never going to see an option that's going to be palatable to me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he told me on Friday, I came in on Monday and I let him know that I was quitting. And he, you know, he was shocked. And, you know, my family was shocked. My friends were shocked. And it was like, you know, so let me get this straight. You're quitting this like awesome job with a company that really likes you, where they're promoting you again to peddle t-shirts on the internet. Like, literally that was a converse. Like, that was the quote, you know? And, I was like, yeah, I cannot continue to do this and be happy. And when I got out of the military, and I know a lot of officers and a lot of NCOs, you know, kind of have this attitude, like, you know, you feel like you're underpaid in the military a little bit, you know, compared to your civilian counterparts, and, you know, especially junior officers, like you get out with this vision of like, I'm going to go make money now. And I did that. And I realized that really isn't shit to me. To some people it is. And that's okay. Like, I never criticize anybody for what makes them happy. But for me, it's incredibly important that I feel fulfilled doing whatever it is I'm doing. So, that was the scariest, but also most fulfilling time. The entire time that I've done Ranger Up, like, that right there was the moment, because, not only was it incredibly hard, you know, leaving that income where you know, I never had to check my bank account. I never had to think about anything like that. But I also, unfortunately, of course, almost short, like, you know, I think a month after I left, we split, and I had two toddlers at the time, one and three. Yeah, it was like the easiest thing in the world would have been to just go back to another corporate gig and kind of find some balance. But, you know, I was renting like two rooms from a buddy, one for my kids, one for me. You know, he just had a house and it was just him. It was so bad at one point that I had $50,000 in credit card debt and $1,300 to my name. Like, it was real bad. And, I told myself that if I couldn't increase that bank account over the next month, that I had to get a second job. I wasn't planning on quitting, but I'm going to have to get a second job because, you know, I'm heading towards bankruptcy. Yeah. And, the next month I had, you know, $1,350, and it sounds really silly, but I worked like hell to get that $1,350. And then the next month I had $1,500, and the next month I had $3,000, and so forth and so on. And, that fight on the death ground moment was kind of the turnaround for Ranger Up. So that third year went from 200,000 to 650,000. Oh. And then that fourth year, the first year where I was, you know, full-time RU, it went well over $1 million. And that was the beginning of like a truly, you know, aggressive trajectory. And then 18 months after that, that horrible moment, I was buying a pretty nice house in Chapel Hill. So life turned around pretty quick, but there was a 15 month period where I was like, holy shit, like, what did I do? But you know, I just kind of kept moving forward.
I think that's a pretty powerful background and a great story, and you know, appreciate you taking the time to walk through that with us, because I think there's a lot of lessons that a prospective entrepreneur or somebody that's on active duty that's starting the side hustle, or that third shift entrepreneur that maybe hasn't walked away from everything completely, but wants to start something on the side that they hope can grow into their main gig or full-time, you know, employment. That's a great, you know, inspirational background story to show that there could be a path towards that. So, you know, one of the things we talk about a lot, Nick, is, you know, when you're starting a business, there's plenty of people that are willing to take your money, that are somebody's willing to help you build a website, to take over your marketing, to take over your fulfillment, your distribution. Like, somebody's willing to, you can pay somebody to do anything. But when you're starting the business, though, it's so important that you have a firm understanding of the fundamentals and, you know, the basics of how the business operates. And so, in the military, we talk about how we all have a military occupational specialty or an MOS, and there's certain things that we're all expected to do. I know Marines love to say that every Marine is a rifleman, but you know, for every infantryman on the front line like yourself, there's a quartermaster making sure you have beans and bullets, transportation making sure you get to the fight, aviators overhead, medics on standby, you know, and on and on and on. You know, what was the first kind of thing or functional area that you decided, I, as Nick, don't want to do this myself anymore, or I think somebody else could do this better than I can do it, and it's time for me to start outsourcing or bringing other people in? What was some of that decision making and points for you in the early days of Ranger Up?
Yeah, so for me, the decision kind of made itself. Again, I wish I had this story of a great vision, but I was at work during the period of time when things shipped. So I had to have somebody that was, you know, shipping products during the day. And it started with, I originally started Ranger Up with another guy. He ended up, we both kind of decided like, hey, this partnership isn't perfect. We had different visions for the company. So we split almost immediately. You know, I think we actually worked together for 6 months, and then I bought him out. But then I hired Tom Amenta, who was a Third Ranger Regiment NCO, and Tom was my right hand guy for 8 years. He went from like, what I loved about that guy and still love about that guy is he didn't know anything about operations, but he had like a can-do attitude. And so he went from, you know, coming in and being the guy that like, you know, fulfilled orders and answered some customer service issues, you know, over 8 years to being a real COO that was, you know, putting out thousands of packages a day on systems that he had built himself. So I really lucked out with employee number one. We were a two-man band for a while. And then the next thing that we had to hire, it all came down to volume. We got to a certain volume where, you know, it wasn't enough to have Tom filling orders all day by himself. And then when I got off work to drive over and help him fill orders, like we needed, you know, to increase, you know, that area. So for a long time, the only thing we hired for was another set of hands to get orders out the door and everything else. So we were, you know, we were the marketing, you know, we wrote the stories, rewrote the copy. You know, it was a two-man band plus a bunch of manual labor.
Okay. Hey, Nick, so I know you mentioned while you were working John Deere, you know, it was about 3 years before you launched off. So, and you had a young family, kind of like the same situation we're in. So how did you structure like your day? Of course, you know, we feel the same way. Like, right? We have day jobs, but then we're working on assault forward and we have families and we're doing other things. So what was a typical day like at that point? Like, you know, I'm sure it was crazy at that time, right?
So, you know, I'd get home around 6:30, have dinner with my ex-wife and the kids. And then I would, you know, basically play with the kids until they went to bed. Then I'd open up the laptop and work till about 2-3 in the morning, then sleep 3 or 4 hours and do the whole thing again, and work weekends on Ranger Up. And then, you know, every once in a while, I would just basically collapse on a Saturday or Sunday and sleep for like 12 hours to kind of make up for everything. And that was my routine. And it was a hard routine. Like it took a toll. So, you know, that's another thing that changed when I went full time into Ranger Up. So whenever you're splitting time, you always have to remember that you're giving your best hours to the day job. You know, no matter, you know, I'm a pretty hard charging guy, and I also am a guy that doesn't need a lot of sleep and can go for a long time. It's a thing that like people find annoying because I don't really shut off. But I also know that, you know, the attention that I'm giving something at 10 a.m. is significantly better attention than the attention I'm giving something at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a challenge. But on the flip side, if I had just jumped in full time right off the bat, I would have made massive mistakes. And I don't know if it would have succeeded. I don't know. I very likely would have run out of money before, you know, Ranger Up was successful enough. So, you know, I especially if people aren't sure of what they're doing, or, you know, they don't have a significant savings or an investor, I really do recommend the, you know, the slow roll attempt at and going into entrepreneurship, because you get to learn mistakes and you have a backup. Like I was fortunate that I had a job that was good enough where, you know, something went wrong. Like, oh crap, we need more inventory. I could write a personal check for 10 grand and it, you know, like the problem was solved. That gets harder later. You know, like if Ranger Up had a problem right now, that's not a check I can write. The operation is just too big. There's too much going on. There's too many, you know. But those are the things that you could do back in the day. And if when you have your own income that is separate from the business, and this is something people really need to understand, when you have your own income that's separate from the business, you're going to make better decisions for the business. When you need money from the business, you're going to prioritize your own personal needs ahead of those of the business. Mm-hmm. I have watched multi-million dollar successful companies fall apart because the owner just felt like, you know, he or she needed to make $500,000, $750,000, needed this car, needed this home, and they pulled and pulled and pulled from the business, and then something happened and the business had no recourse and they lost the business. So people make crazy decisions. Like it's, you would think that you would have the same discipline that you had when you were smaller, but especially companies that blow up quickly, people don't realize how hard it is to build a profitable company. And when you get lucky, and I don't really believe in luck, but there's an element of luck in anything, you know? So like if somebody is continuously successful, that person is not lucky. But, you know, look at something like Facebook, right? No doubt Zuck is a genius. No doubt he's a very smart guy. But you cannot look at the Facebook story and think anything other than, man, like he really, the timing was perfect, right? Nope. Now he's grown into a successful business, many fronts, and I'm certainly not talking about him, but just think about it on a smaller scale. Like if you launch something at the perfect time, blows up, you don't necessarily have an appreciation that growing a business is hard, and you're not necessarily able to repeat that. If I don't know if that makes sense or not.
No, it does. I mean, so Nick, so I guess, I mean, you you talk to a lot of veteran entrepreneurs, people starting, right? Is that a problem that you see, that guys want to quit their job, take on debt, and they think they have to run it that way versus the way you kind of did, and kind of where we're doing too? Is there, you know, we have kind of two things, and we're scaling it slowly and learning.
Yeah. So I the biggest two things that I see that kill veteran entrepreneurs early and brutally. The first is a sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. So when you are starting something and you think it's the best idea in the world, that doesn't mean that other people have to think it's the best idea in the world. I tell people all the time, your idea probably sucks. And that's okay. You should still start and then iterate going into it, knowing that your idea probably sucks and you're probably going to have to change it. When Ranger Up started, it was a comedy brand, pure comedy. You know, it still has a lot of comedy, but comedy doesn't drive sales. It drives some sales. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now, you know, Ranger Up has so many SKUs that it basically covers everything. But back in the day, I launched 27 SKUs right out of the gate and only two of them sold. And if those two hadn't sold, I probably would have been done, you know, month one. Because I thought my idea was great and it wasn't. You know, what I thought was funny was only funny to a very small subsegment of people, and I had to adjust and change things. And, you know, it was a process. So then, you know, look at people that have much bigger ideas. Like, at least with t-shirts, the product is cheap. But I have guys that reach out to me and they're like, you know, I want to start, you know, and it's not just for profit, it's nonprofit too. I think of it all as the same thing. And I find it really amusing when nonprofit purveyors don't think of themselves as a business. Like, they think of themselves as better than, and I don't think of it like that at all. Like, you're running a business. The product is a service that you're delivering to the community. If you're not efficiently delivering that product, then you're not succeeding as a business. But that's a different different conversation. But so people will have this vision. And I had a call recently. This guy, you know, heart's in the right place. You know, he wants to build, like, you know, multiple homes for veterans, wants to, you know, all these programs. We're going to have psychiatrists. We're going to have, you know, we're going to have all this stuff. And I mean, we're talking about, like, you know, I'm just doing the math in my head and I'm like, we're talking about a, you know, a $20 million project. And I'm sitting here and I know a guy, you know, locally in North Carolina that just succeeded in doing something very similar, and he's doing it in phases, but he's been working on this for years, you know, with politicians and donors. And I mean, like, he's been grinding for, you know, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, something. And, mm-hmm. and this guy wants to do the same thing in a different location. And I'm very positive. Yeah. Like, you should do these things, but, you know, you need to start small with, like, a program and test the program and see if it works. And he was, like, very offended, you know, like, that I didn't get his vision, that I didn't get, you know, and I'm a very direct person. So I was like, hey man, let's pretend I'm a billionaire and you're coming to me and you want to do this. Why would I give it to you?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? Well, who are you? Well, you know, like, I care about vets and I care. Yeah. Okay. But have you run a business? Have you run a nonprofit? Have you done any of the things? Have you had any jobs that would make me think that you can handle a building project, all of these programs, staff this, make sure that you're continuously raising money from donors? Like, you know, I just went through this giant list of all the things that would be required. And this isn't something I've done. So I don't even know the full extent of what is required to make this project happen, but I've done enough that I have a sense for it. And so I go through this whole list of things, like, trying to lay it out for him, like, this is what people are going to want. And what he got out of the whole thing was, I don't care about the troops.
Wow.
And it was like, all right, bro, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I just gave you an hour of my time, and you know, I'm trying to help you, but you don't like the answer. So you know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I see that a lot. I see that a lot. And that's a thing that you have to kill if you're going to be a successful entrepreneur, either in the for-profit or the nonprofit area. And the second thing you've got to kill is impatience. Veterans in particular, but all entrepreneurs, budding entrepreneurs have this sense that they're going to achieve something now. And so, you know, if you think about timelines, even for things like Facebook, that took years before it was meaningful. Ranger Up took years before it was meaningful. And there was a lot of suffering to get to the point where it was meaningful, like a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of fear. And that's going to be true with virtually any business. Is you're going to have to, you're going to have to suck it up for a long time and not know whether it's going to work. And you have to keep grinding through it and actually enjoy the journey. And that's a super hard thing for people. It's super hard, especially when you have a vision. But I tell everybody, whatever you think you're going to do, it's going to take twice as much time, three times as much money, and four times as much work as your worst case scenario right now. It's just always the way it is unless you get lucky. And luck is great. I've been lucky a few times, but for the most part, everything is a grind. And if you don't enjoy the journey, you're never going to enjoy entrepreneurship, because the memes out there that are like, a chick sitting on the beach with like a mimosa, you see her feet, you see the ocean. There's a dude that's like shirtless standing there. He's got a linen shirt open. You can see his abs. And it's like entrepreneurship is working 5 years like no one else will to have the things no one else can. And every time I see that meme, I make sure I comment like, fuck this meme. Because it's not reality. The average entrepreneur that becomes a millionaire doesn't become a millionaire until they're in their 40s and 50s, typically. The average entrepreneur is in business for 12 years before they get an exit, if they exit. So just off of those two stats, right? Yeah. Just off of those two stats, that's a grind. And so if you're working towards the exit, or you're working towards a certain number, or you're working towards a certain, whatever it is, you're going to be fucking miserable the whole time you're not there. And then when you get there, you're going to realize the thing that successful people realize over and over again. Once you hit the goal, you get like a day, 2 days to kind of like enjoy it. And then your brain's already on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And so if that's all you have, then you're setting yourself up for a lifetime of unhappiness.
Yeah. So you're saying, just to kind of recap, the entitlement, right? Checking the ego, right? Of veterans, of like example, the guy who you gave an hour of your time, instead of being humble and like, hey, Nick's been there, let me listen to the guy. Got an ego, sense of entitlement, and he's probably not going to do anything with that. And then the lack of patience, right? We talk about it all the time. You've been, at this, 14, 15 years now, right? How long have you been doing it? And, we're still pretty young. We're about 2.5 years in, and, we're, playing the long game and then enjoying the grind. Like, we love, like, meeting up at, Sunday at 7 a.m. because we have families, we have work, but we love it. Like, for us, it's not work. So you're definitely preaching to the choir with us. Like, we love everything that you're saying right now, man.
So another way to look at it, right? And I try to put it in military terms. Most of the guys that are talking to me are Army, not always, but but most of the time, just as a function of Ranger Up, seeming like an Army brand, we tend to have more Army people, but it's not always the case. I talk to people from all branches, but the easiest way to kind of put it in military terms is like, do we expect anybody to show up on day one of the military and graduate Ranger school or become a platoon sergeant?
Yeah.
Like, could we do that? Right? No, like you come to, you know, you join the military, you go through basic training, you build up a certain acumen for, you know, what it's like to be in the military and a certain level of toughness. And then you go to AIT and you learn some more skills. Then you go to a unit and they teach you some more, and you go do some training. And at some point, you know, you're good enough and somebody decides, hey, you know, we're going to send you to some training to become a sergeant. You go to that training, you come back, you're a team leader, you get some more. And again, at some point, somebody's like, hey, I really like this guy. Let's give him a shot at Ranger school. And, you know, time has transpired and you have become, you know, a pretty capable individual that has seen a lot of shit. You know, some guys at that point have deployed, you know, like you're a seasoned soldier, and still, you know, 66% of people fail, right? Like it's everybody's fine with that. Like, it's tough and everybody knows it's tough. So why do we expect then to leave the military, start at me, and instantly succeed having paid no dues?
Yeah. Right.
You know, so like guys that like get out and they start restaurants and they've never worked in a restaurant, like the smart thing would be, hey, why don't I go work for a diner? Why don't I go work for whatever kind of restaurant I want to, let me be a waiter. Let me try to be a manager. Let me get some skills and then start my own thing with some knowledge.
Yeah.
You apply that to anything, you know, not to say that you have to, but just you either need to gain the experience or you need to hire the experience, or else you're setting yourself up for disaster. And then, you know, people will always then say, well, yeah, you know, you got a lot of leadership training in the military and that's worth something. And it absolutely is. Like, I think the military is the best possible background to begin entrepreneurship. I just think if we flipped it around, people would find it ridiculous. And I just always tell them to think about it like that. So
yeah,
let's say you kicked ass in the military. You were in the military for 6 years and you were such a badass that in that 6 years you became an E6. All right, let's make it 8 years, or you know, and you were, or 10 years, and you were such a badass you became a platoon sergeant, right? Mm-hmm. Let's flip that. Hey, I worked for IBM for 8 years and I was a manager. So I want to come in and I want to start at platoon sergeant. Who would be cool with that?
Right.
Yeah, right. You guys are laughing, right?
Yep.
Well, it's the same fucking thing.
Yep.
Like, why does anybody think that they should be able to get out and instantly start in this, you know, this level of like high management because they led, you know, a rifle squad or a rifle platoon? Or like, what does this have to do with running logistics for a Fortune 50 company? Like, literally fucking nothing.
Right.
Now,
yeah,
that doesn't mean that your experience isn't valuable, which is why so many companies value it and are willing to put so many veterans into, you know, leadership training programs and or give veterans a shot to learn on the job. But a little bit of humbleness there would go a long way.
Absolutely. No, that's tremendous. That's tremendous background and great perspective there, Nick. So, you know, before we wrap things up, you know, we talked a lot about the background, but tell us a little bit now about what you're currently working on with Diesel Jack Media and current what's happening at Ranger Up. Anything we should be on the lookout for you? Any current projects that you're knee deep in?
Yeah. So Diesel Jack Media is my new shit, and it has been huge for me in a similar way that, you know, I talked about, you know, leaving John Deere and, you know, and moving on to something else. That's kind of how I feel about Diesel Jack. Now, that doesn't remove me from Ranger Up. Like, Tim Kennedy and I are still, you know, major shareholders in Ranger Up and still run Ranger Up on a day-to-day basis. But we've created a new company that basically has hired all of the Ranger Up employees that everybody knows, called Diesel Jack Media. And the whole goal of Diesel Jack Media is to be a marketing agency that doesn't suck. That's our motto. At Ranger Up, I hired 5 agencies over the years to try to do different things, and every single one of them failed, like spectacularly failed. They were worse at us at every function, even though they claimed to be world-class. And we paid some of these people a lot of money. And so over the years of doing RU, we've just picked up on so many skills that get, you know, that get the brand in front of people, that we're essentially offering that service to companies, you know, typically for the price of 1 to 2 FTEs, depending on how much work that you want done. But, you know, to kind of put it in perspective, like, I just think about how many mistakes I've made and how much it's cost me. And to be able to go in there, and we work with companies, you know, our average company is a decent sized company, but still like a smallish company. But we also work with some pretty significant companies. But being able to like take somebody on that has been stuck for, you know, and I won't name the company, but it's a company that basically said, you know, we've kind of been stuck for about 3 years at the same revenue level. And like, we can't figure out what to do next. And we've tried this, and we've tried that, and it's been a waste of money. And in 30 days, we were able to triple their business. Jesus. And it's not magic. Like I'll tell anybody exactly how we approach it. But my firm belief is that all of it comes down to creativity and messaging, right? You know, you have to be willing to go out there a little bit and do something that's a little bit different than anybody else. And so whenever we're talking to a client, a potential client, if they want us to do exactly what everybody else does, like, you know, you're a law firm and you want to just have the lawyers walking like tough guys, you know, American, we'll fight hard for you. Like, we're not going to do that. We'll tell them like, hey, we're not going to do that. So if that's what you want, we're not the firm for you. But what I really enjoy about this, and the idea for this kind of came from my wife, and, you know, because I end up being on the phone a lot with people, you know, like, hey, Nick, can you give me advice on this? Can you give me advice on that? She was like, this is what you really enjoy. You should do the thing that you really enjoy and get paid for it.
Yeah.
And you know, I know that I'm good at this, and I know that our team is good at this. Right now we're batting 1,000 with all of our clients. Everybody's, you know, pretty blown away at the results. But what I enjoy about it is just like watching these other businesses succeed and not hit all of the snags that I hit, because they're really painful snags. So to be able to go in there and just kind of look at what they're doing and recommend a strategy and an approach and then execute on that, it's really cool. And also, it allows me personally, and this goes back to that need for personal growth and personal movement. When you're solving the same problem every day, and I started to look at Ranger Up as solving the same problem every day. And I don't mean that like in an insulting way, because I love that business and always will. But, you know, at some point it was like, man, I've been out of the military for so long that showing up, you know, every day to come up with military t-shirts is kind of like Al Bundy still wearing his Letterman's jacket. Like, at some point, it's like, you've got to do something else. And, you know, and so, you know, I enjoy it. And, you know, I've continued to change that brand through things like, you know, the Bad News Network and some things that are, you know, that are more adult. Like when Ranger Up started, you know, I wrote a lot about like drunken stories and silly things we did. And like, and that was cool when I was in my 20s, but now, you know, I'm in my early 40s and like nobody wants to hear that anymore. And right. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Cause it's like, yeah, it was fun when I was, you know, a kid. And you know, now it's like, you know, I want to make an impact on people. That's what I enjoy. And so, you know, I'm fortunate that I've been able to restructure my life in this way where I can continue to, you know, to work on Ranger Up, but also help all of these other businesses. And I think this is going to be the biggest thing I've ever done. That's my impression right now, based on the acceleration of the business and the impact we've been able to have on people, you know, on people's companies and their outlook. And every day I'm getting a different problem because our clients are incredibly diverse. Mm. I mean, just it's pretty wild when you actually put them up on the board. You're like, you know, there is no common thread. And I love that because every single time it's like, all right, how do we solve this problem? And then once we figure out how we solve the problem, you know, then it's all right, here's 14 ideas, you know, what are our favorite three. And then we're going to the client with, hey, here's our three crazy ideas to grow your brand. And some clients are like, oh my God, like this is awesome. And some clients are like, holy shit, you really want to do this? Like, it's going to destroy my whole company. And I'm like, I know it feels that way, but it won't, you know? And so, you know, sometimes a client ends up being like a toe in the water approach and they slowly give us more and more rope. And other people are like, screw it. Let's go for it. And, yeah, it's really fun. Like, it's really fun to have the calls and just kind of like see how happy people are, and get paid to do it, you know, which is, you know, it, like I said, anytime you're doing something you enjoy and getting paid, like life is pretty good. So this is kind of the next iteration of my life. And, you know, my wife's calling it Nick 2.0.
Well, it sounds and feels good, and we hear the passion in your voice as you describe it. So I think you're right on the money there. Where can folks go if they want to learn more about this or look you guys up online?
Yeah, so you know, Diesel Jack Media is on Facebook and Instagram, and you know, same thing with Ranger Up. It's, you know, we are in the same office, so it's the same people. So however you get a hold of us, you know, works for us.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, from two former kings of battle, we want to thank you as a former queen of battle for being on the podcast with us. And really, really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some of those insightful lessons learned and, you know, helping the next generation of veteran entrepreneurs cut the angle a little bit and hopefully not make some of the same expensive mistakes that you made or some of the decision points that you went through. Really appreciate your candor and sharing that insight with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 17 of the Assault Forward podcast. We apologize again for the audio issues we had during our interview with Nick Palmisano from Ranger Up. If you're interested in learning more, you can always go back and listen to our previous episodes and find us online at assaultforward.us and on all social media at AssaultFWD. Please subscribe and like the podcast. It helps us bring on more guests like Nick and make sure that other veterans hear the show. Don't forget to use discount code AFPODCAST to save 15% on any order at assaultforward.us. It's a .us extension because we're 100% made in America. Don't forget to bend your knees and wiggle your toes. Drink water. We do not want any of you falling out this week. Until next time, continue the assault forward.